Hello, this is Leighton Pierce presenting Radio Sampha, brought to you by the Department of Environment, Water and Natural Resources. You can connect with Sampha a number of ways. Connect with us through Twitter, Facebook, Skype, YouTube, WhatsApp, our website, or email or text us. Welcome to Radio Sampha. We have Tom Robinson back with us today. On the last time that we spoke with Tom, he touched on his diverse crop rotations, and we wanted to expand on that a little bit further. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Leighton.
You did mention about cover cropping, and I've seen it called many different titles at the moment. Summer cropping, cover cropping, and mixed multi-species cropping. Can you tell us what you're doing on your farm in terms of this process?
Well, we're doing a little bit of everything. We just want to trial as much as everything, and it's not on big acres. You know, when we're talking about our cover crops or summer covers, look, it's not on huge acres. We just want to try some different things and get the look of it. So I'll start with summer covers. We've been playing around with summer covers for quite a while. And the last, you know, few summers in the early 2010, 2011, 2012, I suppose, you know, 2010 was a really wet year and we had a great crop of sunflowers following some peas. So that was a true double crop in 2010. So we harvested a crop of field peas, we planted some sunflowers, and then we harvested the sunflowers, and then that went straight back into wheat. You know, that was just showing us what we could do when we had moisture in the summertime. And then since then, we've had some pretty ordinary summers. But we've always been trying to do some summer covers. And what I think a summer cover crop really sort of needs to be after your cash crop. So you've harvested a wheat or a barley or a canola, and you're going into a summer mix. And that summer mix can be as diverse as what you want it to be. We do not run livestock on our farm, so we were mainly looking for deep tap roots rather than feed value. So we were playing around with sunflowers and corn and sorghum, some legumes to make some nitrogen. Another which way we're going, which I suppose is growing a winter cover crop, and then desiccating that in the wintertime, say in July or August, depending on moisture, and then going into a cash crop, so a cash summer crop. So that's a sunflower or a sorghum or a mung bean. And that crop's really got to be high value. And that's why I like my sunflowers and my mung beans. You know, you don't need to grow a lot of them to make some reasonable money. Then we've also got those, another diverse crop rotation is what we're playing with this year, 2016. And we've got some canola and we've got some field peas as a companion crop. And they're going to be harvested together. I've got one paddock where we've taken out the peas. So the peas got to about 6-node stage and we've taken them out just to try and make a little bit of nitrogen. But then we've got another crop alongside where we've got peas and canola grown together. And we're going to try and harvest the peas and the canola and then we'll clean them out and sell them. Another companion we're running at the moment, and it's just a very small paddock, but we're trialling some lentils and linseed or flax. And so the same thing, we're going to harvest them both and separate them and then sell them separately.
So what's your rainfall and the mix of rainfall throughout the year on your property?
So I have one block that's 14-inch rainfall and I have another block that's 18-inch rainfall. And it's mainly 90% winter dominant. And that's what makes us really difficult in those summer months to get something established in December, January, February. So we're just throwing around ideas at the moment of how we can get a cover crop established in those summer months. I see it as opportunistic, as purely opportunistic to get something in the ground in those months. But if we do have a harvest rain or a summer rain, then we should try and make advantage of it. And then also what we're thinking is we're going to be sowing them over our moisture probes or maybe over one moisture probe. And then we can see how much water we're actually using.
So what's your understanding of the water that is being used currently? Because I guess a lot of people are concerned. They want to preserve moisture throughout summer. And if we've got a crop growing there, it'll be using up that moisture.
Absolutely. And it does use some moisture. So a sample trial on my farm where we've got two probes side by side, summer cover crop over the top that grew between knee and waist high. And it was a mixed summer cover crop of sunflowers and sorghum, corn, tillage radish, some field peas, but also some lab and cow peas and mung beans. It did use up some moisture. It used up between that 30 to 40 mil, and it wasn't, I thought we were going to use more, but for some reason the plants were very efficient. But also those plants are very good at extracting, you know, the moisture in the top. And so we need to select our plants. If you don't want to pull deep moisture, then you wouldn't put in deep rooting plants. You would probably just put some legumes in and maybe some tillage radish. But if you've got a salinity problem and you want to get that deep moisture to try and stop a salinity problem, then, you know, that's when you could go for your sunflowers or your sorghum or your corn to get that nice, to get that deep water so you can fix your salinity issues.
So when are you planting these summer crops? Are you waiting several weeks after you've harvested, or what's the best opportune time to go in?
I think before a rain front. It's so hard to predict rain fronts at that time of year. But from advice from friends in the US, they're recommending to go straight behind the harvester. So this year, this summer 2016, we are going to be trialling some summer covers straight behind the harvester. It adds a level to the work. So, you know, you've got a harvester running, you've got a grain cart running, and now you're going to add a seeder running as well. So it's going to be a strain on some things. We run some on-farm storage, so that's going to help in that way. But, yeah, it's definitely going to be different seeing the seeder out straight behind the harvester. But I really do think that the best cover crops we've grown has been straight into moisture, whether that's, you know, one day or 2 days after a rain or before a rain. So, you know, does it just come down to picking a paddock and picking a little piece and saying, right, we're going to sow this, you know, a couple of acres or maybe 100 acres right behind the harvester. If it doesn't come up, well, it's there ready for a rain when it does rain.
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear more about this practice over the coming years, and I'd like to thank you for giving us information that you've learnt so far.
Thanks, Leighton.
SANFA would like to thank our sponsors John Deere, Growing Solutions, Grain Growers, Manutech, NDF, Sinon, NAB, TopCon, AGF Seeds, Glencore Grain, Viterra, Pete's Soil and Garden Supplies, and Needham Ag Technologies for their valued support throughout the year.
We're back here with Tim Berman from the Department of Environment, Water and Natural Resources. Tim, you've been previously running a lot of farmer surveys on land condition and no tillage practices, etc. What have the surveys shown in results?
We've been doing surveys about every 3 years. And we based on telephone surveys, and about 1,000 farmers are surveyed each time. And we asked a series of very similar questions so we could monitor adoption of practices and attitude towards those practices. And one of the key pieces of information that we do get out of that is the adoption of no-till sowing systems. And if we go back even about 10 years, there was only about 15 to 20% of the cropping area sown by no-till. And now the last survey, which was about 2 years ago now, it's around about 65%. So two-thirds of our cropping area is sown with no-till sowing method. And if we look at a single pass sowing method, it's nearly 80%. So it's a very high adoption rate.
Are you making any assessments when you're out in the field doing your surveys of no-tillage paddocks versus conventional paddocks and whether one is more prone to erosion throughout the season?
In general, there is very little erosion now compared with what there was even 10 years ago. Unless, of course, there is a catastrophic event like the pinery bushfire, and that has been a very difficult situation for the farmers to manage that have been in that situation.
Can you fill us in on how the Sustainable Soils team deliver their projects statewide?
Okay, probably it's probably worth explaining that is that we take a statewide perspective in our role. We're looking at condition of the soil, its health, and what we actually need to do about it. But then we don't deliver the individual projects with farmers. However, the natural resource regions run those projects, and also the industry groups and the farming systems groups, and we support them to actually deliver their projects, which actually work with farmers.
Okay, I'd like to thank you, Tim, for giving us your time.
Thanks, Leighton. It's been a pleasure.
If your business would like to consider sponsoring SANFA, contact our staff to work with you to develop a package that will result in a win-win-win situation for your business, for SANFA, and SANFA's members. Contact us at admin@sanfa.com.au. SANFA have a range of sponsorship packages available. We'll have one that suits your business. All sponsors gain entry to our annual conference, a booth at the annual conference, an advert in the quarterly magazine The Cutting Edge, entry to crop walks, and promotion through SAMHSA Radio.
Okay, welcome to Radio SAMHSA, and today's guest is David Evans from Grain Growers. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Leighton.
We're here today to talk about ProductionWise. Can you tell us what ProductionWise is, David?
In a long story short, ProductionWise is an online digital cropping management program, which basically draws together a lot of bits of information from a climatic and also management perspective and then displays them to the grower in real time and in paddock specific fashion.
And how does somebody get into ProductionWise?
The good thing about it is pretty much most people who use ProductionWise have already got all the tools that they need anyway. They've already got a computer. Most people have got a smartphone or a tablet or something like that. We recently surveyed our grain grower members across Australia, and one of the things that came out of that is something like 85% of them have a smartphone. So you've pretty much got all the tools that you need. There is a free section which allows you to map your farm, to put in your paddock boundaries and soil types and that sort of information. Also to then record operations that happen in that paddock across the course of the year and to report on all of that. So that part of it's free. You can just log on to the website and set yourself up with an account and start. And then there's another section which incorporates a lot of decision-making tools such as Apsin, the crop simulation model, also draws on a lot of climatic data specific to your property and then gives you a paddock gross margin report, that sort of financial information, and that's available by subscription.
So let's say we're out in the paddock and we're adding an entry into ProductionWise in our smartphone. Do we have to re-enter that into our computer?
Absolutely not. That's the whole point of it, that you just need to do it once. And so the whole point of it is that, you know, data entry is kept to a minimum. You do it once and then it's stored on the cloud remotely, and, you know, multiple people from your business can have access to it simultaneously.
What about spray records? Can you keep spray records with ProductionWise?
Yeah, absolutely. Keeping of spray records is becoming an increasingly important part of most farmers' businesses. And with ProductionWise, you can do all that electronically. And you've then got a record of what happened for each spraying operation in terms of what chemical or chemicals, at what rate, at what time, who was operating the equipment, what the weather conditions were, and all of that sort of stuff.
And how does ProductionWise integrate with your agronomist and his recommendations?
Okay. ProductionWise gives the farmer the ability to connect with his or her agronomist via the program. So basically it gives them the ability to look at what's going on in the farmer's program as though they were them, if that makes sense. Importantly to stress, I guess, with issues about data security, grain growers' policy is very clear in that the data collected on ProductionWise belongs to the farmer always, full stop, and so we won't ever share it or sell it or hire it or show it to anyone except with the farmer's permission, which gets you around the issue of being able to share it with your agronomist or pretty much anyone else. Yeah, so agronomists can make recommendations, send them to the farmer. They'll appear in the farmer's paddock book as a to-do job. Once they're done, then the agronomist can also see that that's happened. So it's good risk management, I think, for both parties to have a record of, you know, just exactly who said what and when and where.
Is there any future of it being intuitive and helping farmers make decisions, or is it more or less a record keeping?
Oh, no, look, it's intuitive now in terms of decision making. That's, I think, one of the most powerful things about it. Once you get enough information in it on a per paddock basis, that you can use it to do a lot of what if type calculations. So, for example, I know growers who use it now for making nitrogen application decisions. Given the amount of soil moisture I've got in this paddock, given the crop that I've got in the production stage that it's at, if I put on another 50, 100, 200 kilos of N, what's the most likely thing that would happen in terms of my yield? And that's a really quick and powerful thing to be able to do. Certainly once growers get a good feel for it and start to trust the model based on their own data, it's remarkably accurate.
So what's the next step in the future for ProductionWise?
I think probably the next thing that's going to happen is that we'll have the ability to be able to integrate more precision ag data into the program. So, for example, something like, you know, yield data from your header monitor, or EM38 maps, or, you know, variable rate inputs, that sort of stuff, to be able to input them reasonably seamlessly into ProductionWise without too much work on the farmer's behalf, but then to be able to display them as a series of maps, you know, relevant to each paddock, so that, you know, you'll be able to stand in the paddock and say, well, show me a map of last year's yield data, for argument's sake, or something like that. So it's going to be really, really powerful, I think.
Yeah. And how does the subscription work with farmers?
Yeah, it's a yearly subscription. If you want to have the whole suite of tools and technology, it's a yearly subscription. It's on a there's a couple of different price points depending on how many hectares you're actually cropping.
And where do growers go for more information on production-wise?
Well, in the first instance, if you can go to the website and log on, that's at www.productionwise.com.au, or they can call me, or else we also run a series of free grower training workshops around Australia. I think this year in South Australia I've run about 15 or so, and they've been really, really popular. Growers, I find, tend to learn really well from other growers. And so there's several options.
Oh, well, on behalf of Radio Sanford, I'd like to thank you, David, for coming in today, and look forward to seeing the next future of ProductionWise.
Thanks very much, Leighton.
This is the South Australian No-Till Farmers Association Radio Sanford broadcast. Thank you for listening.